Just sat in my first comfy chair for the entire MojoCon, and I've now had a first glass of water for the entire MojoCon, and I'm feeling, I won't say refreshed, that would be a lie, that will come with my first glass of beer. And I'm sat with...
Sarah Jones.
I only know you as Sarah VRJ.
Sarah VRJ, virtual Sarah J.
Oh, virtual Sarah J, there you go. No wonder I can't tweet you. But I did bask in a quality panel because it's covering an awful lot of stuff I play in but don't practice on a professional level outside of... Yeah, well, I have made money taking photographs in 360 of inside canal boats, because canal boats are very difficult to photograph, but you can do it quite easy in 360.
I like canal boats, and I think that'd be really, really awesome. For me, it's always about getting into a place where nobody else can go and seeing what you can do in that place, and that's really exciting. So if you can't get to a canal boat, then... of course, take someone there.
Well, straight away, I like that. And why wasn't that talked about in the panel? Because it was mentioned, because I say to people, think about the camera as being the person's head. Because if I go into a laboratory at the university, I plonk the camera on the table and I say, that is now the student's head. Yeah. The student is inside the experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm taking a photo as we're talking and I look really quite concerned with what you're saying. I think it's more concerned with your big hand, and I'll tweet that out for you to see afterwards. But that's true. The camera is always the person in VR. And that means that you can start thinking about it in a really exciting way. I spoke in the panel about a film that I'd made where it ended up that you felt like a tiny ant being squished on by these giant Irish dancers' feet, because the camera was really low on the floor and I wanted that close-up shot of the feet dancing. And you can imagine that shot visually when it's flat. You know that shot in any kind of dance film where you've got these feet and the close-up of the feet. And I wanted to do the same thing. But then when you put on a headset, you are an ant and you are being trodden on by these scary 12-year-old dancers.
That was a really important takeaway for me, because I say to people, oh, it's just breaking all the boundaries, because, you know, as a photographer in past life full time, I would think about the framing. And now I don't. I just have to place the camera in an instance. And I love what you're saying about placing that camera, as in making it a witness, or actually delivering someone almost magically, to enable them to exist in a space they would not normally get access to. But I thought, wow, yeah, I can do stuff on the floor, I can hang stuff above me, but perspective is enhanced.
Yeah, perspective is the whole thing. So it's whether you want someone to feel like a child. You know, if you want someone to feel like a child, your camera is low. If you want them to feel like a giant, you stick it up high. It's why I have an issue with a lot of drone VR and putting 360 cameras on drones, because I don't know who that person is, unless you're Superman flying through the skies. I don't know who you are in that environment. For me, it's about becoming someone else somewhere else, and that's where the technology really lends itself. So having that kind of different person's perception, and then having all the interview set up so you're talking directly to that person, you have to think about that camera as somebody, because when your audience puts on the headset, they are that somebody being spoken to. They are wherever your camera is. And that's what's really interesting, I think.
So there's a few examples shown where VR was going to enhance the element of storytelling in a particular situation by delivering, well, interactivity for one thing, and less of a passive enjoyment of a story as you choose and you're almost the editor of the scene around you. Somebody listening to this is going to have had a clunky experience. Oh, I've just clicked on this goggles symbol and now I've got to do something, put my phone where? Oh, this VR stuff is just getting in the way at the moment. Why is it potentially important, or why do you recommend that they go that little step further and immerse themselves in some of this just to kind of get a feel for it?
I think there's a couple of really interesting things there. I always refer to a good friend of mine, Kim Magica, who works for Curiscope. She's incredible. And she talks about the VR first kiss. You have a bad first kiss, you never want to kiss again. You have a bad VR experience, first of all. You're never going to look at it again. And it's wasted technology. So we kind of have that responsibility to make sure that only the stuff out there is good stuff. And we've all made bad stuff. And it's got to be good for your first experience. It is really clunky. The biggest problem and the biggest obstacle is the fact that it's not that accessible still. I've done demos in classroom situations where I've had 30 people all trying to watch something and then the Wi-Fi has let them down, or they're watching it in the native YouTube resolution and they're not upping it to the highest res possible. The audio is not very good, or they haven't got headphones, they're not completely immersed. And there's all these issues, and you think, wow, if you just sit down, and it doesn't have to be off the Rift or the Vive, you know, even if you've got just a Gear VR and you're watching just the VR introduction, you know, 1 minute showreel, the Samsung launched, and that sucks people in. And it allows them to see how good it can be, providing they've got the headphones on and they're letting themselves go into that environment. The problem is when you're just watching something, you know, tilt and rotate on your phone or on Facebook, and yeah, it's immersive content, but it's not using the technology to its full advantage, but it's still being used.
It's tough to explain the potential and the things on the periphery of well, household devices to some people. I was having my lunch in the BBC Blue Room, and they've got, you know, I don't even know what it's called. That's how, you know, I'll put the gear on and then I won't know what it's called. It's the Microsoft one where I'm doing the hand gestures.
The HoloLens.
I do know that, but I'd just forgotten. So I had the HoloLens on, and within a couple of seconds, I'd learned all the gestures, and I was hand gesturing my way through an arcade adventure game in virtual reality. And I was thinking, oh, you know, I could get so addicted to this. I probably need to unplug myself for my own health right now. I've heard some fascinating stories from friends who have gone out and got the PlayStation, which is going to be people's probably first port of call when it comes to enjoying this content, to step away from the journalistic side of things, or not when the gaming is becoming journalistic. And they are saying that it's so immersive after a while, it's less virtual and more a new reality. Would you agree with that?
It certainly can be. Last week I spent 48 hours in VR to test those kinds of ideas. And it's interesting saying PlayStation, because that's the one device for me that isn't as good as it should be. It should be your really simple plug and play. Nothing goes wrong, just stick it in, put on the headset and you go. But I was trying to do Resident Evil and it wouldn't work, and the controllers wouldn't work, and there were so many things that weren't working, which again is one of the big problems, that it's not easy all the time. Always something goes wrong.
How did you move around? Did you have cameras on the...
For PlayStation? Well, PlayStation...
No, when you did 48
hours
continuously.
Oh, okay. So when we were moving, some of the time, we had the look-through camera. So we were looking, and one of the things we were looking at was how the... I thought somebody else was taking a photo of us, and I didn't know what they were doing.
Amazing how you're distracted by the possibility of a lens being...
There's a lens in my face.
How do you do that with 360? You can't. It's looking everywhere all the time.
I can see everything. So what we were trying to look at was how the real world appears within virtual reality. So we're creating the right kind of experiences.
Sorry to bring it down a level.
Going to the toilet.
Why can't I be original? That's exactly what I was thinking.
It's the first question. How do you eat, and how do you sleep, and how do you go to the toilet?
How do you pee-pee?
Yes. We were told that we had to take 5 minutes out of every hour to shut our eyes on and off in case our eyes dried out.
Good time to go for a wee.
And to go for a wee.
Right, otherwise...
So 5 minutes every hour, that's it.
They could mess with you as well. They could give the toilet teeth.
Exactly. All kinds of things could go on.
That would put me totally off.
So it was really interesting. And the representation of the real world through the look-through camera lens was just so distorted and so kind of hyper-reality.
And there was a picture of you standing on a plane at altitude...
Yeah.
Is that like Ryanair's new thing?
Yeah, absolutely. It was probably a less stressful flight than the one coming over to Dublin. A lot of experiences that people are creating are things like wing walking or snowboarding and all these big high impact things like the roller coasters. And you think, well, how does that world actually look in VR? So that's what we did. So it was the end of the 48 hours. We ended it walking on the wing of a plane. I was really stupid because I agreed to all of it.
Because you actually walked and not stood still.
Well, I didn't quite realise until the morning, literally 9 o'clock, we were doing this at 10 o'clock, until 9 o'clock in the morning, that I didn't have to take off in the plane and step out and walk and strap myself in.
Oh, brilliant.
So I'd been telling everybody, including my poor parents, that that happened, only to get to the airfield and actually read the stuff that they had sent me that said I didn't have to do that. I would be strapped in at all times. But I had to climb up onto the plane to start. So that was panic over. So after that, it was easy. Nothing mattered then.
You watched too much Indiana Jones.
I know. But it was great because you really got a sense of what all your senses are like. And because I do a lot of multi-sensory VR, the impact of the wind and the smells and the sound, all those things, is the whole experience. So if we're just looking at creating experiences visually with a little bit of audio thrown in when we can be bothered, we're not doing ourselves justice with the technology that's meant for immersion and meant for experience. So it kind of backed up all of my arguments about multi-sensory VR.
When it comes to multi-sensory, have you worn any impact suits or sensual clothing? Or maybe you have worn sensual clothing. But there's certain clothing
there
around.
In this conversation.
I mean, I know the stuff exists, yeah. And pioneers will have to experiment. Normally the research doesn't come out, and that's great, but having that perspective also is very interesting. For me, what I would like to try is... Not that I'm into violence and the full-on military games. I know a lot of VR is being used for military training, but being in that situation where when you are hit by something, it hurts.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. If you're going to be playing a game, it's a bit one-sided.
Yeah, absolutely. Though you say that, and I played Knockout, Fighter Knockout, Boxing Knockout, something like that last week on the Vive, and your setup. And it was the one time for both myself and Dean Johnson that was doing this 48 hours. It was the one time that we felt that we were really present in this environment. And it's this cartoon boxer that's punching you. And that's it. But it's on the Vive, so you've got a bit of feedback and the controllers. And this guy's coming at you, and he's really getting in your face, and you're punching him, and you can feel yourself being punched. And then they're so clever, because when he punches just a little bit, then it goes a little bit blurry and goes back to normal. Then another part, it goes black and white for a couple of seconds, and then a proper punch, it goes starry and blacks out, and then it comes back to your vision.
Wow.
So you know it's a character. He looks like a cartoon, but you can really feel being punched.
And they could tie that in really easily with an air cannon. Have you seen the pressure you can feel off an air cannon?
Absolutely.
And an air cannon can be pretty much flat against the wall in some instances.
Yeah.
That would be a great way of getting that extra sensation.
Yeah, so there's loads of things like that which are really, really interesting. There was some great data that was done about 10 years ago about health VR for education and surgical training. And all of the research was saying that until you get different smells being used, people aren't going to believe that they're in that environment. So that kind of backs up the work that we do with multi-sensory VR. But it's really difficult, and you obviously can't transport sensors in phones. Wow. So that has been
There's a USB unit where there's something, I can't remember if it was 8 different scents and a mixture of the combination. You can get quite a lot of the worldwide sense. Obviously, Pine just helps.
Yeah.
So maybe that's one extra way of these companies making some money,
exactly,
by saying, here's a top-up, which would be just like buying an air freshener for the house.
Absolutely. So there's ways that you can start doing it. We do a lot of kind of big experiences. We're putting the smells in tents and that kind of thing. But we find people feel more immersed because it's how you experience something. You don't experience something just visually. You experience it all around you. So that's why we kind of do that work.
And great work indeed. MojoCon, how has it felt? How are you feeling this year?
I love MojoCon. Mm. It's such a great community of people and friends that it's always great to be here. People are excited to talk and engage. It's been great having such a big panel with VR. I remember last year, I'd said to somebody, they said, oh, what do you do? I said, oh, I did a lot of work in VR. And they said, is that video rendering? And I was like, this is a Mojo conference. Why is someone thinking the VR is video rendering? So I'm hoping that we've moved on from that. I'm hoping that we're kind of getting there. What's been interesting for me was last year, so many people had Ricoh theaters. This year, I've hardly seen any, but I also haven't seen that many 360 cameras. And it's like, well, I think that's kind of how things are at the moment. Last year was a big buzz year for early adopters or early adopters in the fourth wave. And now it's kind of slowed down while we kind of figure out what we're doing with it.
You say that. I've seen more 360. You're talking about on a personal level because there's a lot of... this must be the single most documented conference in the world due to the amount of people filming people, filming people, filming people. And I've seen more 360 cameras in your session, obviously, because they all come out to actually stream some high-level stuff. Some stuff costing £3,500, which... is equal to or better than some 16, formerly £18,000 technology. And I'm thinking, this is moving fast in a really exciting way. And when you look at what the guys at Insta360, the Nano, how accessible, we talked about how difficult it was and a bit clunky to get into it, but the 360 Nano has really made it quite easy for people. Of course, it was mentioned on stage, which got a little bit of controversial comments in the Twitter that the Ricoh Theta is dead. And I've stopped using mine, if I'm totally honest, because the Insta is easier. But when I saw the jackport in the bottom of the new Theta, and if it is going to be doing really interesting immersive audio, this is the missing link at the moment.
Absolutely. And also, you know, you've got the new version, the 2017 edition of Samsung Gear. I love using my Samsung Gear. And what's great about the new edition is it's meant to work off iOS as well. So to be able to have that functionality will be great. Tackling audio is a massive thing, but it is getting so much more accessible. But then you're still talking, you know, minimum couple of hundred quid on a camera, which a lot of newsrooms and a lot of freelance journalists can't do. But then there's great, if you can film properly, it goes back to everything. If you know how to film, it doesn't matter what you film on. There's apps like PySlice, so you can do 360 images and video, and you can link the stories as well, which is really exciting. Google Cardboard app as well. You can take photos through that. So you are seeing a lot of opportunities with free apps, which for me is great because people can start experimenting and playing without forking out a lot of money.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant. It was really enjoyable learning experience. I mean, the production at MojoCon is always second to none. Just the lighting and the comfort, and I don't want to.
Theme tune though. I didn't have a theme tune.
Theme tune, really?
Yeah.
Well, you got a phone. You could have played it down the mic.
I know. I usually have Virtual Insanity. That's usually my theme tune.
Picture you're running on now with a dressing gown and punching the air and then throwing it.
Absolutely. I could totally rock that look.
Where can people find you online if they want to know more about your projects?
Online, always on Twitter. Virtual Sarah J is usually best, and then I tweet out everything else.
Brilliant. Virtual Sarah J. Sarah, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.